What on earth am I here for? Every thoughtful person has pondered that question. And the answer isn't just academic. The answer you arrive at will be the North Star by which you navigate your whole life, your identity, your relationships, and your vocation. And so it's too important to get that answer wrong. I'm Kim Weir. This is the Art of Friendship Podcast. Whether you think about it as your calling, your purpose, or simply your direction in life, defining it is essential to creating a fulfilling life where our ambitions and our values are compatible and rewarding. Sadly, for many of us, rather than our purpose defining our pursuits become our purpose. We trade a life of significance for a life of career success. We mistake vocation for validation. Along the way, some important things and even people can get sacrificed. And we miss out on the deeply satisfying life that comes from discovering the answer to the question, what am I here for? Paula Ferris almost missed it. In fact, for many years she did. As the co-anchor of ABC's Good Morning America Weekends and the co-host of The View, Paula was running hard after what she mistook for her purpose in life, being a great broadcaster. For that purpose, she was willing to make a lot of sacrifices. Sacrifices that were taking her away from people, things, and principles that she valued, not closer to them. That's when she started to look again at the question, what am I here for? She tells her story in the book Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of Calling. The lessons she learned can help us discover our own calling and how to live that calling out in our faith, in our relationships, and in our career paths in a way that brings harmony to every aspect of our lives. Today, she's here to share all this with us. Paula, thanks so much for stopping by and sitting at the table friend to friend with us on the Art of Friendship podcast.
My pleasure to be here, Kim. Thank you for having me.
I'd love to start by just learning a little bit about you background-wise. So often in the role that you're in broadcasting, really your goal is to put the spotlight, the focus on somebody else and not be the story. But that also means that a lot of people who know you don't know you. And so if we were to back up a little bit and say, let's just take one quick snapshot from your childhood that kind of helps someone say, ah, that tells me something about Paula. That's how I can know her. What would a snapshot from childhood be?
A snapshot from childhood would be growing up in a small town, Jackson, Michigan, with a cornfield in my backyard, getting dirty, rolling around, playing outside all the time, going to Michigan football games. That was a special connection that I had with my dad, but just a very, I would say, lower middle class upbringing. We didn't have a lot growing up. Shared one bathroom, four kids, family of six, but we had a lot of love. And to our family, it was all about faith and food and family. It really was.
So many people have the story of a faith background, and that story includes, I grew up as a child with a faith background, and I became an adult, and I went another direction, and it took me a long time to come back. Give me a snapshot of what that transition from childhood to adult person of faith looked like for you.
Well, I think, it's one thing to grow up with the faith of your father and mother, and then another thing to actually explore it and accept it for your own and pursue it for your own. And I think for a very long time, I grew up in a Christian home. I liken myself to a Christian mutt because I grew up, initially I was born into a family that we were Catholic, and then we switched to the Lutheran church. So I had my first communion in the Catholic church, and then I had my confirmation in the Lutheran church, and then I went to a Baptist high school, and then I went to a Bible college. But the common denominator throughout all of that was this Christian community, this ecumenical community of believers that we went to on Sunday nights. So it didn't matter if you were Baptist or Methodist or Episcopalian or Catholic or Lutheran, they met at the local YMCA in Jackson, Michigan. It was called Morning Star Christian Community. And we had Sunday night praise and worship. We called it prayer meeting. And Saturday nights, we had what we would equivalent to a small group. That was Saturday night. So I grew up exposed to quite a bit. So when I see different religions fight over little things, I'm like, at the center of everything that we should really focus on is loving God and loving people, right? So that's why I say I'm a Christian mutt, because I've been a little bit of everything, but I know at the end of the day, the most important thing.
To be able to bring that kind of a background, particularly in the role that you're in, where you're trying to, in so many ways, I think, bring that sense of intersection with someone who is very unfamiliar
to someone who you're introducing them to in your audience. I mean, I feel like a lot of ways that's what we do here. It's what I do on my radio show, is we're trying to help people have an immediate connection with somebody they've never met so that the words that they say can be impactful. And to be able to have that kind of a background that can value people from different viewpoints, it's kind of rare today. We really are in a place where differences are no longer one of those valued commodities. Instead, it's same, same, same. That's what gave rise to the cancel culture. How has that impacted the way that you approach your role as a broadcaster?
I think most importantly, you know, as a Christian, as somebody who loves Jesus, I think it's very important that yes, we have to hold true to our convictions, but at the end of the day, it's all about loving God and loving people. And Jesus gave us that command of love one another as I have loved you, right? Sacrificially. And I think we forget that. And so often we wind up surrounding ourselves with our echo chamber and the people that think like us and see like us and hear things the way that we hear them. And I really think that's not, if you look at how Jesus conducted himself, that's not Jesus honoring. That's not how Jesus walked on this earth. And so I love to sit down with people that I disagree with. I think that's one thing why I really enjoy doing The View. And I think it's important to remember, and one thing that I learned from doing The View was that God really instilled in me was God loves this person just as much as he loves me. They're fearfully and wonderfully made. They are made in the image of God. They were knit together in their mother's womb. And it was to try to see people for people instead of just seeing people as policy and reducing them to, oh, she's an anti-vaxxer or she's pro-choice or they're a Democrat or they're a Republican. Just to see people for people for who they are and loving them and saying, you know what, I can sit down, we can disagree, but I can still respect you. I just went through this situation with a family member. We disagree vehemently on a particular issue. And I said, I don't agree with it. I don't agree with your choice, but I can still respect you and I can respect the decision. And I think that that's something where I think we need to do a better job as Christians. And it's not always easy for me, but it's something that I'm very passionate about sitting down with people, especially people I don't agree with, and just saying, I can love you and I can respect you. We don't have to agree. And that's okay. That is okay.
You mentioned the role on The View that anybody that watches that show knows that it thrives on controversy and divergent opinions. And it's got to be a really stressful thing to sit at that table. And yet the funny thing is, so many of us experience that every day.
We do.
As you alluded to, when we sit at the table with a family member, when we sit at the table with coworkers, it's like it's being lived out in our own experiences. And it's this place where relationships are unfortunately being fractured.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's become my way or the highway. And I think as believers, we really need to learn to die to ourselves. And if it's important to somebody else, it should be important to us, regardless of what that is. That doesn't mean we have to agree with it, but we should love people how Jesus loved people. And that was in a very sacrificial way, dying to ourselves. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult to do, but I think it's something that we should strive to do.
I want to talk a little bit about your journey, because so many of us struggle with the idea of what am I on this planet to do? And that's not a question that is exclusive to followers of Jesus. It seems sort of the innate question we're born with, that thing that is in us. It's like, what am I here for? And so many people either are dissatisfied with the answer that they found or are frustrated because they haven't found the answer. If you and I had the conversation we're having 5 years ago, I know that the conversation would unfold very differently than it's going to unfold today. I'm excited to hear how the journey that you've been on has yielded for you some kind of universal principles that I know you wish you'd known sooner, but that you are passionate about now sharing with other people. Things that you focus on in your book Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of Calling. 55% of people, you quote this statistic in your book, say that their job is what gives them their identity. Mm-hmm. And so this question of calling is important, because for a lot of people, calling, the destination of that answer has to do with their job. And for you, that was true too.
I think it's a flawed question, but it's one that's really just part of our society and part of our faith cultures. What do you want to do when you grow up? What was that one thing that you were born to do? The first question we ask somebody outside of their name is what they do for a living. And that's really baked into our culture and our society. And then it's reinforced in churches and faith circles where they are telling us every day we need to find our calling and find that one thing. And unfortunately, I learned the hard way that we can be called to do different things in different seasons, but when we wrap up our identity and our purpose and our calling in something that's going to change, like a job, that's when we're bound for identity crisis, which is what I had when I stepped away from The View and from anchoring Good Morning America weekends. I didn't know who I was outside of it. And then I was angry with God. I said, well, isn't this the one thing that I was born to do? What am I supposed to do now? I had placed all of my identity in a job. And God taught me that my worth wasn't work and my value wasn't vocation and that my calling wasn't just career and that callings change throughout our life. And we should never wrap up who we are and what we do. And we need to start asking a different question. And that's, who do we want to be when we grow up? What are the parts of us that aren't going to change? And so God really set me on a journey to peel back those layers. Instead of the doing is the being and find out how I was uniquely created. What are the gifts and talents that I have? What are the gifts and talents that you have that aren't going to shift and shake? And guess what? When you discover those, God can use those on a myriad of different vocational branches and vocational seasons. So it's given me the permission to try new things, realizing I don't have to do one thing for the rest of my life. I can take my natural curiosity and my question asking. I love to champion and challenge people. That's really who I was created to be. Those are the unique gifts and talents that God gave me. And now I'm just exercising them on the different vocational branches where God places me, whether that's with my children. I think, you know, being very present with them is very important to me in this season of life. Taking that, you know, advocating and championing my children, whether I'm advocating and championing my marriage, taking that into this new space of this podcast that I launched in February, the Faith and Calling podcast, where I talk to people about, you know, what they're created to do, what they're called to do, and who they're called to be. And I just think I'm really passionate about asking the right message because, again, if we wrap our identity in something that's going to change, like a job, and by the way, we'll experience anywhere between 3 and 7 career shifts throughout our life, we are bound to have an identity crisis. So let's dig in and root into who we are, the parts of us that won't shift and shake in crisis or pandemic or job change, and root into that. And once we do, it's freeing. And remember, Jesus said his purpose, he didn't conflate his purpose in John 12. I think it's John 12, 27. He says, I have come to fulfill my purpose, to offer myself as a living sacrifice. He didn't say, I've come to fulfill my purpose and be the best carpenter that I could be. He didn't wrap it up in a job. He wrapped it up in who he was created to be and being and offering himself as a living sacrifice. So loving God, loving people, that's what we're here for. That's my purpose. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to love God and love people uniquely. And just as you should through the gifts and talent uniquely that God gave you and gave me.
So one of the things that you said that I think strikes a chord in many people is you're going to have an identity crisis. Mm-hmm. And the prelude to that was if you wrap your identity up in what you do in your career, in your vocation, you're going to have an identity crisis. A lot of people have experienced that. And I know that's an authentic statement from you because you've experienced that. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear a little bit about that because you had an identity crisis because you did exactly the thing you're telling us not to do. Mm-hmm. You wrapped everything up in your career and that was what gave you your value. Tell me a little bit about how you got to that place.
Sure.
And then what was the tipping point?
Right. Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with loving what you do, but there's a fine line between loving what you do and being defined by what you do. And would you know who you are outside of what you do? If things changed and you had to walk away, would you still know who you are? And I always thought the answer would be yes. And then when God called me out and said, I need you to slow down and step away from this, and I went kicking and screaming, I realized, no, I don't know who I am outside of it. And it dates back to about 2018, and I was at the height of my career anchoring Good Morning America weekends and co-hosting The View. And I really felt God just this sense in my spirit that I needed to slow down. I was burned out. That doesn't mean I didn't like my job. I loved it, probably too much. It was my narcotic of choice. It was a drug. The accomplishment, the achievement, and the spotlight and the success was an absolute narcotic for me. And I couldn't get enough of it. But God said, slow down. And he allowed several, you know, tragic and crazy events to happen in my life to get my attention to slow me down, because I wouldn't slow down. And then once I did walk away and pump the brakes at the height of my career, I thought it was crazy. I didn't know what I was walking into, but I just had this peace that I was supposed to do it. And a lot of people thought I was crazy. Again, I thought it was crazy to do this. And that's when it just set me on a path of really like of discovering who I was outside of what I did. And again, pushing back at those lies to find that one thing you're supposed to do and to lean in and all of that stuff, right? Our kids are asked what they want to do when they grow up from the time they can walk and talk. So I walked away. I pumped the brakes at the height of my career in 2018 into a much less prestigious role at ABC, just a general correspondent. I wasn't getting the big gigs anymore. And I didn't know who I was. I wasn't Paula Faris, the co-host of Good Morning America weekends and co-host of The View. I was just Paula Faris, like a general correspondent. And I was a wife and a mom, and it didn't feel enough. And so I said, well, God, why isn't this enough? And it's because I had wrapped my identity in something that could change. Whatever, some people might be a job, some people might be a bank account, some people might be a relationship. That's when God said, look, I'm going to call you to do different things in different seasons. And I think God has called us to do different things in different seasons. But our overarching faith calling, our overarching purpose is not a job. Our overarching purpose is to love God and love people, right, on this earth, to let people know there's something different about us. That is our purpose. And it's been a very freeing, at times scary journey, because God, in doing so and calling me to different things in different seasons, you know, we left New York City in the pandemic, what we thought would be a couple of weeks, and ended up moving to a small town in South Carolina. Weren't sure why God wanted us to stay. My sister lives here, so that's what brought us to be here to begin with. But we just felt God saying, stay, you know, this is your new home, even though we didn't know what was on the other side. So when you're obedient and you follow that, you know, that call on your life, and you press into fear and step out in faith, like, God can do amazing things, but it can be a little scary. It really can be. But I just want to continue to be obedient. And when I have that peace in my spirit that I'm supposed to do something, I'm going to proceed, even if it's crazy, even if it's scary, because I know that I don't want to try to outrun God, because I can't. I've tried before and it doesn't work out so well. But I have been given a permission slip to try new things and take risks and branch out, because I know at the end of the day, my worth isn't in a job, you know, and God's going to call me to do a lot of different things. My purpose is not in a job. My purpose is to love God and love people wherever I'm placed. And I'm going to continue to do that.
You tell the stories in, and I say stories because there are several, and I just keep wanting to go, Lord, really? Don't you think she's had enough of sort of one hit after another,
right?
Leading up to this epiphany that you have, that you have created a hierarchy in your life of the things that are most important to accomplish, and work having worked its way up to the top amongst those things. And you guys can read the book, called out, because Paula's very honest in this, includes just some ripples going through your marriage, some ripples going through your health, some ripples going through your work, car accidents, flying apples, concussions. I mean, just one thing after another. Really, I'm reading it and I'm thinking, man, poor girl.
Or this girl's really stubborn and she can't take a hint from God. It's probably that one.
And that's my question. Okay, and so that's my question. All of these things taken together at some point bring you to the place of saying, I'm listening, God. You're trying to stop me from continuing to press forward on this particular path. So here's my question to you. Do you think that had those things not been cascading in front of you, let's just say it was just the relationship issues, because in my experience, both in women's ministry, as a Bible study leader, as a woman, as a mom, as a friend, in my experience, the most common casualty of this thinking about doing versus being is relationships. And generally, it's the relationships that are closest to us. It doesn't matter whether you're a high-powered, you know, broadcaster, or whether you're on a church staff, whether you're, you know, climbing the corporate ladder, you know, at a bank. It really doesn't matter what it is, whether you're making volunteerism your high calling in life, that the when it's all about the do, the casualties are the people around us. And somehow it's difficult to see that until it's almost too late, until the people around us have said enough is enough. So my question to you, had it not been for the apple, the health, the car accident, I'll let the recipe work. Do you think you would have gotten to this place?
No, absolutely not. And I think
before it was too late to salvage relationships.
No. And so one of the reasons I had this peace in my spirit that I was supposed to pump the brakes was, again, my marriage was really suffering and I wasn't spending as much time with my kids as I wanted to. My health started to suffer. So those professed values that I had held so dear were really, you know, contradictory to the choices that I was making professionally and personally. And but when I had that initial sense that I was supposed to slow down, I was like, no, I don't think I'm hearing you right, God. Why would you call me to this place only to ask me to tap out for a little bit? Surely I'm mishearing you. Surely I'm hearing you wrong. And so I put my head down and I dug in even harder. And that's when this season of hell happened. And I do think God allows painful things to happen in our life to get our attention, right? For me, people have said, oh, you're so brave to pump the brakes at the height of your career. My answer is not really. I didn't have much of a choice because of this season that God allowed, which you mentioned a little bit of it. I had five kind of tragedies, health events happen, freak accidents. It started with a miscarriage and emergency surgery. And then I had a concussion at work with that flying apple that you mentioned. Somebody threw an apple 60 miles an hour at my head before I was going live for Good Morning America. Weird story. So I was concussed from that for 3 weeks. The day I got cleared to go back to work, which I was so excited to go back to work because I didn't know really who I was. I was like anxious to do something that fulfilled me. But the day I got cleared to go back to work, I get in a head-on car crash. And then I got influenza, which turned into pneumonia. And so I knew that if I wasn't going to slow down, God was slowing me down. He said, you're not going to slow down. So I am going to have to slow you down, Paula. And that's exactly what he did. So no, I don't think I would have slowed down had God not intervened and tried to get my attention. And oftentimes that has to happen through tragedy, through hardship and through pain. But I'm grateful for it. On the other side, I wasn't so grateful for it as I was going through it. But I'm grateful for it because God got my attention and I'm in such a great place right now. In a great place. You know, I'm really able to be present with my children down here in South Carolina. That's my priority. Instead of my kids fitting into my plate as a career woman, I'm like, whatever those different vocational branches, whatever I've chosen to do, those passion projects, they have to fit into me being a mom first now. And there's sacrifice involved. You know, we're living in a really small town. We left our home in New York City, left a lot of our friends, and I'm not working at ABC anymore. But it's been the absolute best thing for us. It's led us to this point, and I'm very, very grateful. I don't think everybody has to blow it up, okay? We blew up our lives. Sometimes you just need a pause. Sometimes you need a little reroute, a little detour. And sometimes you do just need to push the reset button, and we needed to, and I'm grateful for it.
So one of the things that you said, and it just painted a picture in my brain, is those who are thinking through, what is my calling in life? How do I, as a believer, mesh and dovetail my calling to love God with my role in work or accomplishment or whatever it is, you know, you're going to fill up those hours of your day with? And one of the things that you said is that we're to love God and love people, and that vocation should be a vehicle to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
I have this picture in my brain as I'm contemplating this. It's sort of like a jockey on a horse. You know, the jockey is the love God. So it's love God with everything you have, and then love others with everything he gives. But you're supposed to be riding that horse, and the horse is just the vehicle to get the love of God that he's given you out amongst the people. You know, that it's seriously just what you're riding on. The point is, how are you going to get the jockey to where he needs to go? And I just think that is definitely a paradigm shift in the way that we think. We think of, on one hand, we have love God, love people. On a wholly other hand, we have vocation that honors God. We still got God in there. We want to honor him. We're not going to go off and, you know, you know, do something that's dishonoring to God. And yet this beautiful picture, instead of the two hands separate, you're clasping them together and you're saying there is a way to love God, love people, and then to use that vocation as the vehicle to get the love of God to the people. It's just such a simplistic and yet profound way to think about that. At what point were you able to really solidify that as you're struggling to say, no, God, yes, God, no, God, yes, God, fine, I'll do it. I know when you said in one hand, it was like when you finally made that decision and had these conversations, you said it was relief on one hand and fear holding the other. You know? And
yeah,
so
absolutely.
At what point were you able to solidify this principle so that you could give yourself wholly to it?
Mm-hmm. I like your analogy of the horse and the jockey. I love visuals. I'll give you a visual that really helped me to just manifest this in my own life. I do think we have two callings. So I think first of all, we contextualize calling. We have a faith calling, or I nuance that and I use it interchangeably with the word purpose. Okay. So we have a faith calling and then we have a vocational calling. Okay. Faith calling and your purpose. Think of a vine and a branch. Okay. A healthy vine produces many branches, does it not? So your purpose and your faith calling is to love God and love people. And that's your vine. If you're healthy and you stay attached to that, you will branch out in many different areas of life. Okay. But if the branch is not rooted into that vine of your purpose, which is to love God and love people, the branch will wither and die. It will not be a healthy branch, but a healthy vine staying rooted in who you are, what you're here for, to love God and love people, God will use those on a myriad of different branches of your life in different seasons and different chapters. But you have to stay rooted in that. And so, like, I know that my vocational calling is going to continue to change throughout my life. I'm getting ready to form a company. Kim, I have no idea what the entrepreneurial space and business space looks like. I'm not a business person. I'm not an entrepreneur, but God gave me this passion. And for so long, my fear would have held me back and say, oh, you've never done that. That's not your comfort zone. You're not equipped to do that. Will people see you in a different light? Will you see yourself in a different light? And I realized that's why I hold everything that I do very loosely, because I know that God wants me to love God and love people in this new capacity. And of course I'm going to be scared, but that's just part of it. But I have a piece that I'm supposed to go for, and I'm going to use my gifts and talents that God gave me to be curious and ask questions and champion and challenge people. And I'm going to use those in this space. And I hold it loosely because this is just a season of vocational calling. It's just one branch, and God might call me to do something else in a year, you know? So I don't want to get my identity from it. It's just what God's calling me to do in this season. But that branch is staying rooted in, I'm doing this for God, to love God and love people. This is where He wants me to be, to love God and love people.
You're not painting a picture of the spiritual person. The super spiritual person gives no sense of priority to their vocation. You're not painting a picture of that. Or that the super spiritual person won't pursue achievement. Excellence is a biblical quality that mirrors the image of God in the world. Work He created at the very beginning in the garden and called it good.
Yes, work hard.
Work hard, exactly. So these are not opposing qualities. And yet, it is such a slippery slope, because our desire for the inner satisfaction that comes with success. So here's my question for you as you head off on these new paths. In your book, you're very honest. In your conversations, you're very honest to say, I get a hit from success. I appreciate when people appreciate me. It feels good to,
yeah, totally.
We all know that. We all like success. We all like the pat on the back. We all want recognition. We all fight the allure of people pleasing. And yet, God takes us to this place where we have insight on realigning our life, which you've done. How do you keep the Faith and Calling podcast? How do you keep this new entrepreneurial project? How do you keep those from replacing all of the old things that satisfied that inner need?
Yeah, the thing is, that's why I hold it loosely, because I know that it's a season, and I don't introduce myself anymore with those titles in the mix. I say, I'm Paula. You know, before I would have said, I'm Paula, I'm the co-anchor of GMA and co-host of The View. and that was it. And now I'm Paula. I'm a wife, mom. I love Jesus and I'm curious. I ask questions and I like to champion and challenge people. So I hold everything loosely. And yes, God does say, you know, do everything, you know, work hard as if unto the Lord. And I do think that we are to work hard. We are to love hard as well. But I think it's okay. It's human nature, you know, to get a little hit from success, but I don't think it's healthy to be defined by it. And I continue to ask myself, why am I doing this? Am I doing it for my own personal gain, or am I doing this because I feel like God has me here? And so it's a paradigm shift, and it's asking yourself that honest question, why am I doing this? Is it for me, or is it to love God and love people on this branch where God's placed me? And just remembering why you're there and who you're doing it for. And before it was skewed and I thought I had it right, but I realized, no, I was there. I felt like God called me there, but then I was there and I was moving up the ladder quickly because I loved it, you know, and I wanted more. And I lost myself along the way. And I forgot who I was doing this for. And God called me out of it. He saved me from myself. He really did.
There's nothing so satisfying, and you have to experience it to know the reality of it. There's nothing so satisfying as to be in the lane that God called you, doing what you know He called you to do, period. And it doesn't matter whether that lane is on a county road like we have all over East Texas, or whether that's on a 6-lane freeway. It doesn't matter. The point is, when you're in the lane He's called you to be in, there is such satisfaction. I think of Paul, who says, I've learned to be content in all circumstances. That is the joy of deciding that that's the priority. Mm-hmm.
But Kim, that's the joy. But it's also accepting that that lane's going to change and that branch is going to change and that you weren't just called to do one thing in your life. God's going to call you to do many things in different seasons, always remembering why you're doing them. So don't back yourself into a corner and think, I've got to find that one thing I was created to do and then you find it and you lose yourself in it. Because I think God creates us to be unique human beings. What we're good at and what we love and what other people notice we're good at and we love, that's a really good way to uncover your unique giftings and talents. Those will never change, okay? That's who God uniquely created you to be. But what He created you to do is going to change. So while your purpose isn't going to change, your vocational calling will change throughout your life. So hold it loosely, but always stay rooted in who you are, who God uniquely created you to be, and why you're here.
I love that. Back to that horse and rider analogy. You may wind up changing horses. You may get off the horse and get on a bus. You may get on a train.
Right.
You may get on a plane. You're taking who you are.
Hold it loosely.
Hold it loosely, regardless of what the vehicle is.
That's right.
You mentioned a moment ago that for you, especially as you've been having conversations on your Faith and Calling podcast, which is an opportunity for you to talk to people who are making impact in the world and how their faith has informed that. And through that and through your own experience, you kind of have found three elements that people have consistently used in order to find their lane for the moment, but their lane. Can you walk me through those three? Because I think that's so practical and helpful.
Yep, for sure. You're like, okay, so what am I good at? Okay. You know, for me, I thought, for so long, I was just a broadcaster, and I don't know what I would do outside of broadcasting. And I have no other gifts and talents. God created me to do this. So already I'm limiting God and I'm limiting myself and the talents and giftings that He's given me. Same for you, whoever is listening. You ask yourself three questions, and these three questions help you to uncover your unique talents and giftings that you use on each vocational branch. Okay. So you take these unique giftings and talents onto every branch that God has placed you into every season. You ask yourself what you're good at and what you love and what other people notice you're good at and you love. And it's not enough just to be good at something. How often do you hear people say, oh, I was good at it, but I don't love it? Well, guess what? That's not you, okay? You can be good at a lot of things, but if you don't love it, that's not your natural inclination, nor where God is leading you. I did a podcast with Chris Tomlin early in the Faith and Calling series. I think it's like episode 5. And he was a psychology major at in at college, graduated with a psychology degree. He was going to go on to be a sports medicine doctor or sports doctor, and he was very good at it. One of his professors wanted to publish his journal, that one of his writings. And he's like, you know what? I was really good at it, but I didn't love it. And at the same time, he had this burgeoning music thing happening, but like he didn't have a label. He didn't have a website. It was all happening very rudimentary and very organically, like grassroots. And he just felt like, okay, do I pick between this? I have this path of where people are expecting me to go down this path because I'm good at it, right? And other people say I'm good at it. But what's missing there is he didn't love it. So unless you're good at it and you love it and other people notice you're good at it and you love it, that's not an area to proceed. But you peel back those layers. It's not just I'm a good broadcaster or I'm a good author. Like peel the layers back a little bit. What are you good at? What do you love? And what do other people notice you're good at and you love? And for me, what I'm good at and what I love, my nickname growing up, Kim, was Paula 20 Questions. I just incessantly curious about everything. I'm curious. I like to ask questions. I like to challenge people. I like to champion people. And those are the talents and gifts that I have that I'm good at, love, and that other people notice I'm good at and I love. So yes, that made me an effective broadcaster, right? When God had me on that vocational branch. But now there's other vocational branches where he's placing me. And I guess what I'm using? What I'm good at and what I love and what other people notice I'm good at and I love. Curiosity, question asking, championing people, challenging people. I'm taking those into every season of vocational calling, into every branch and every chapter.
And what I love about that framework is the flexibility of it.
Totally.
That is not you're arriving at a destination. Mm-hmm. You are really arriving at a place that just fulfills those different aspects, which mm-hmm. means it can change, it can grow.
There you go.
It can run its season out, mm-hmm. which is something we don't like to hear.
Yep.
Once we go to the hard work of finally figuring it out, we want to know this is it. And mm-hmm. yet God rarely works like that. That mm-hmm. is the element of faith,
totally.
Of being able to say, I'm following you, Lord, even if you turn a corner and I have no idea what's around that blind corner.
Yeah.
To be able to have some of these elements to say, God, isn't God gracious though? He doesn't say, hey, it's a crapshoot. Just figure it out. It's a guessing game. Yeah. I'm not going to give you any help whatsoever in this.
Yep.
And yet, yep. of course, his help also comes from a sound mind and from relationships.
Yep.
I would love to segue a little bit into that. Let's start with the people in your life who were willing to speak into mm-hmm. the shaping
sure.
of vocation for you. And then mm-hmm. I want to come back and talk a little bit about those people who are willing to speak truth into your life.
Yeah, I think it's important to have both. When I said the three keys to uncovering your vocational lanes and your talents and giftings, that third question is, what a trusted people notice that you're good at and you love. And for me, I didn't grow up thinking I wanted to be a broadcaster. I had no idea what I was going to do in college or what I was going to do professionally, if I was going to do anything. It wasn't until one of my high school teachers, I almost said college professors, it was my high school drama teacher, Mr. Barsoon, who was the first one to say, Paula, you're a good narrator. He cast me as the narrator in most of the school productions. He said, you can tell a great story. You have a compelling inflection. You know how to pull people into the story. You should go into broadcasting. And literally that was the first time I ever thought about it. And I said, huh, okay, I'll do that. And so that's why I went into broadcasting in college. But I was so scared of failure. I didn't pursue on-air broadcasting in college. So I emphasized in production, shooting, editing, writing, and producing. So all behind the scenes work. And then even though my college professors at the time were encouraging me to do more on-air work because they said that I was natural and looked comfortable, but I didn't believe in myself and I allowed my fear to paralyze me. And I really didn't go for it until 9/11 happened and I was working an arbitrary job in radio sales, making a killing as a 25-year-old. And God, that's when I really felt God say, you need to do this. You need to go for it. You need to press into your fear. In the same way as with Moses, I'll be with you. God's not going to call us to something that he doesn't equip us for. And so I quit my job, started handing out resumes, and I got hired to be a production assistant, which is like the lowest position on the totem pole, doing a little bit of everything, making $7 an hour, and worked my way up. But because I knew how to shoot, edit, and produce, I put a tape together and I sent it to the news director. I handed it to our news director and he eventually put me on the air there. But it was those people that were speaking life into me and recognizing my talents and gifts, my professors and my high school drama teacher and those around me that I trusted. And then it was trusted people around me, and it has continued to be trusted people around me that have called me out when I've needed to be called out. And I think you have to do life with a small handful of people that have seen under the hood, that see the warts and the rust and all of the imperfections and the flaws, and know you to your core. And I think God speaks to you through those people. And he has spoken to my husband and I so often through these people that we do life with and people that we trust. And I'm so grateful. But you have to do life with people. You have to be real with people. You have to be relational. You have to be sacrificial and compromising with people. And you have to have people that can call you out, that can speak life into you, but can also call you out when you need to be called out in love.
There's such a difference between the voice in your head that is self-critical mm-hmm. and the voice of a friend who loves you,
yep.
who is honest. Mm-hmm. You alluded to the fact that you kept thinking to yourself, I can't do that. I'm insecure. People won't like yeah. me, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot on this podcast about that running inner dialogue and the voice in your head. For those of you that have my book, The Art of Friendship, you know, I spent a chapter talking about the stage that we give to that voice in our head.
Yeah.
For you, I think it's more prevalent for women. We're our worst critic. Totally. And it is so destructive. For you, how was that diverting for the path mm-hmm. that you felt like in your inner, you're hearing from friends, this is a direction you should go. And yet insecurity is just welling up in you. That yeah. voice keeps telling you. What was the consequence of that as you listened to that voice? And what has it been, what has it taken for you to get that girl off the stage and mm-hmm. stop giving her an audience in your head?
Well, I just think it's a matter of like holding it to the test. Is it true? And often you hold it to that test and it's not true. But so often we isolate ourselves and we think that we're the only ones that are having these thoughts. And that's just a lie. That's exactly what the enemy wants us to believe. And so for me, one thing that really has gotten me out of my own head is to start focusing on the times where I didn't allow my fear to paralyze me, and to think about how freeing and invigorating and how confident I was. But also, I didn't have to live with the regret, even if it was a small decision. I didn't have to live with the regret of knowing that I didn't go for it because my fear paralyzed me. And I ask myself also, I have a best thing declaration. And I've heard other speakers use this in the past, but it's something that I really hold true. Anytime I have a peace in my spirit that I'm going to go, that I need to go for something, I say, expect and anticipate fear, but then a tool that will help you press into that fear and move forward is ask yourself, what's the best thing that can happen if I go for this thing? So instead of asking yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen? Because often we think we go there and we think negative, and the worst thing that can happen is usually, you know, I'm going to fail in front of people and that's enough to scare me off. I try to change my paradigm just a little bit and say, what's the best thing that could happen if I go for it, and just focus on the positive. And that really just takes me to a place where I'm able to get out of my own head, and I'm really able to take those steps and press into fear.
I do best case and I do worst case, because when I do worst case, I take it out of some unknown horrible thing that could happen and destroy my life. And I say, what is the worst thing that could happen? Oh, okay. I can handle that. And then what is the best thing that could happen? Oh, I want that. And the balance of those two things helps me move yeah. forward.
Yeah.
This has been such a really practical conversation about helping us figure out our calling is how we spend our life. It is how we live out who we are. What we do is a big part of that. And so the balance of helping us understand how those two things go together, I think, is transformative. I'm so thankful that you spent a little time with us. I know that for you, family is everything, and now you got to hop off and go do that family thing.
Thank you, Kim.
We'll see you on the Faith and Calling podcast. And of course, everybody can get to know you a little bit better through Called Out.
I appreciate it. And make sure you get the paperback edition, because I continue to hear from those who read the hardcover that they wanted to take it another step They wanted a companion guide. So instead of issuing a study guide, when the paperback came out in July, I just said, let's include a 6-week discussion guide within the paperback edition. So it's a little bonus for all the readers, and it helps take you through those tenets of calling and purpose and fear and change. And a lot of the stuff that we talked about, you can do it with your book clubs or your Bible studies. And again, the study guide is within the paperback, so you don't have to buy two things. And I'm super excited about it.
Bonus, bonus. All right. Something for you to do with your friends.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, Paula.
Thanks. God bless, Kim. I appreciate it.
Paula said paradigm shift. And isn't that what we've encountered today? What am I here for? The answer isn't about what I do, but who I am, who I was created to be, a person who would come to know and love God, and then through that, pass on that love by loving others. That is where the do comes in. That's how we live that out. How wonderful that the sky's the limit. How has God created you? How has He knit you together? What are your talents and passions? That can help you know how to live out loving God and loving others. A paradigm shift. Who were you created to be? Before anything, I hope you discover the answer to that. I hope you understand that you were created to be in relationship with God, that He loves you, that He has moved heaven and earth to pursue you. He's held nothing back in that pursuit, even to the sacrifice of His own Son, because there was no way for you to come into a relationship with Him, to know Him. Your sin was a barrier. Your sin is a barrier between you and God. And yet, He is willing to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, remove the barrier. He removed it by placing the burden of your sin and the burden of my sin onto the shoulders of His sinless Son. And then He executed the judgment our sin deserves onto His Son. And He validated that that was enough to bridge the gap by raising His Son from the dead. God so loved the world that He gave His only Son, that whoever believes in Him would not perish but have eternal life. Why would I share that with you? That's my purpose, to love you well by telling you the truth, to love you well by showing you where the door is to come into relationship with God. I know some of you have made that commitment, and today was just a refreshing reminder that you can live out that purpose in every aspect of your life. For those who have not, I hope you will accept that invitation simply by confessing your need to a holy God and thanking Him for the provision that He has made. It's that simple. Believe in your heart, confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, and you will be saved. Romans 10:9. From there, your calling is transformed. So how is this for a North Star of calling for God's people? From 2 Corinthians 5. Since then we know what it is to fear the Lord, we try to persuade others. What we are is plain to God, and I hope it is also plain to your conscience. We are not trying to commend ourselves to you again, but are giving you an opportunity to take pride in us so that you can answer those who take pride in what is seen rather than what is in the heart. If we are out of our minds, as some say, it is for God. If we are in our right mind, it is for you. For Christ's love compels us because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all have died. And He died for all. And those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for Him who died for them and was raised again. So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone. The new is here. All of this is from God, who reconciled us to Himself through Christ and gave us a ministry of reconciliation, that God was reconciling the world to Himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And He has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making His appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made Him who knew no sin to be sin for us, so that we might become the righteousness of God. What is our calling? Love God and love people. And that's what it looks like. What you do in living that out, That is the fun adventure, right? So let's start that adventure today. We'll make that our friend foray by following those three simple steps that Paula Ferris laid out for us. First of all, what are your gifts and talents? What are you good at? What's your aptitude? Second, what do you love doing? If you have an aptitude for something, you don't love it, mark it off the list. But what do you love doing that also fits into your gifts, talents, aptitudes? And third, and this is where the friend part comes in, what do others tell you that they see in you, that you're good at, that they see a passion for? Spend some time thinking about that, making a list in writing if you need to. And where those three converge is a great starting point of what it looks like to live out your calling in the pursuits of your daily life. I would love to hear what you discover about yourself in that. Email me at info@kimweir.com. Would love to hear from you. I'd also love for your friends to hear from you about this podcast. Will you share the Art of Friendship podcast with someone you know? Also, we would love it if you would take a minute and just review us on the podcast site where you listen. And that brings an end to this episode of the Art of Friendship podcast. So until we're together again next time, my friends, keep friending with purpose.